Right now on Tech Radio, a super egg exclusive.
Hi, I'm Artemis. I am a computer-generated AI voice, and you're listening to Tech Radio.
Every week online and on air with RTE Radio, we bring you the very latest in tech from Ireland and across the world. This is episode 1012, and this week for the Easter bank holiday, Niall is away on holiday, so we're going to crack on with Jason Walsh for the week's news. Plus, we'll yoke around with a few Easter eggs and shell out for a few classic April Fools.
From techcentral.ie, this is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
So, Jason Walsh is joining us to talk about the news. I hope I haven't killed the entire audience now with all of my
excellent
Easter
jokes.
Puns. Yeah. That's it. We're done. Great to have you with us this week, Jason. Are you following this whole thing with China versus the USA with TikTok and processors and yada, yada, yada?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so enormous, it's kind of hard to ignore.
The latest this week is that China are now hitting back and that they have put a ban on using AMD or Intel processors within government computers in China.
Yeah, I mean, fascinating move when you consider that China is clearly doing this not only retaliatory, but it's also gearing up its own chip industry.
It is actually, and they have a load going for them. I'm sure we see them in all kinds of other computers from that part of the world. But I think this is actually really going to hurt AMD and Intel as well, because China makes up, I think it's like almost a third of Intel sales, global sales, 27%, I think. And AMD, smaller company, I think it's 15% of their global sales comes from China. It's operating on a level that I'm just not used to, but I just think it's fascinating to see the toing and the froing. And when they first came out with Trump and he was going, I'm going to ban TikTok, you're kind of going, why? And that is still rumbling on with Biden. And now China are kind of fighting back, if you want to put it that way, banning AMD and Intel. Fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. But we've got a similar story with China and the UK government. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, China is just an absolute hotspot at the minute. And, you know, as part of the kind of wider trade war, we've seen a move where the UK has imposed sanctions on a group of state-sponsored hackers called APT31, a bunch of individuals operating out of Wuhan. And they have been accused of inveigling their way into the UK Electoral Commission and other state systems. The support has come from the EU on this. It's taking Britain's side. And there's also a separate but related indictment of seven more individuals in the United States. So, you know, a real kind of cyber espionage going on.
We'll keep an eye on that as we go along. Also, just before we came on to do the podcast this week, we were chatting about AI. You're a fan, but it annoys you intensely. I wonder if I would describe myself as similar. Where are the pluses and minuses of AI for you, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, it would be ridiculous to be against it, you know? I mean, it's just a very interesting technology, isn't it? But the problem is, computers have a way, they have a habit of getting in your way. And, you know, I just want the computer to get out of my way. So I can imagine a lot of scenarios where systems are popping up and trying to aid me and help me. And that's, of course, that's the big use case for generative AI, where it's actually hindering me, getting in my way, popping up things in front of my face that I don't want.
Yeah, I've found I use it for writing news articles and stuff like that. Or I will ask it, do you know what I haven't cracked yet? Is I want AI to summarize things in 4 or 5 bullet points. Just give me the story and give it to me in bullet points, okay? Because I'm going to read the story and really I want that as a refresher. But the AI just finds it impossible to get the right bullet points or the most important facets of the story. It's great at summarizing and it's great at writing, but it just can't. I did a thing recently. And it also, they call it hallucinations. There was one about names or something like that. And it said, well, the problem is because of the name Karen or something like that. And I read the entire story. It didn't mention the name Karen once.
Yeah, I mean, the transformer technology, what's really going on under the hood there, where it's putting, you know, what we think of as sentences together, but really are just strings of words. You have to remember, it doesn't actually understand what it's doing. And, you know, that creates problems.
And I think that's a great example of that, because it's very good at rewriting something or summarizing something possibly. But when you actually want, you know, nuggets of information, hasn't a clue because it's a computer. And the other thing, that it's not necessarily AI related, but it's like you saying, the computer getting in your way. I find this fascinating. I think I had it with my permanent TSB app the other day, right? I was in the middle of making a payment and I had to authorize it using the app. And when I started the app, it went, will you take a survey about blah, blah, blah? It's like, no. Or it'll pop up and say, this app needs to be updated. Update now. Yeah. It's like, I'm in the middle of doing something, you know, it's that kind of stuff. I can see you smiling and you know exactly.
That has literally happened to me standing at the till in the supermarket with a lot of angry people behind me.
Yeah. It's just that kind of stuff drives me nuts. But AI is a part of our life and we're still grappling with it. It reminds me very much of days when the internet was quite young and it was a bit of the Wild West online, kind of in the mid 90s and stuff like that. Well, certainly in Ireland, we weren't as used to it as the States. But AI seems to be going through the same thing at the moment, and we have to figure out things like, I remember in the early days of the internet, it was like, how can we get people to make payments? Do you know what I mean? Like, just to buy, if people could use their credit cards on the internet and trust it, that would change the world. And sure enough, it did. But it took a couple of years to sort it out. But with AI now, you've got governments grappling with, and we were talking with China and versus the USA and what kind of equipment they have and banning certain companies from operating in other countries and all that. The White House has this week revealed some of their key AI guidelines. And it's interesting to see how they are thinking, because what they are trying to put in place is safeguards for AI applications in areas where it could cause a lot of damage. So elections will be one thing, okay? If AI gets involved there, it could, I mean, we've seen movie plots about all that kind of stuff. Or if AI was to, the one that always makes me smile is if it looks after infrastructure. Or if AI was to look after the nuclear warheads housed all over the United States. And, oh dear, what if the AI decided to launch them all at the same time? Boom, you've got Terminator in real life. So that's what they're trying to get across, and they've outlined a couple of strategies to keep it in line. For example, government agencies are going to be mandated to disclose the AI systems that they use,
yeah,
which I think is a good idea. It's just public service and stuff like that. And then each government agency is also going to have a new AI officer who will be responsible for how AI is implemented and what AI is implemented and all that stuff. So they've been announcing that and running it around. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Elsewhere in the news today, of course, crypto, of course, what's it called? Bitcoin is off on another run again. But we're looking back at the FTX boss. Yeah. He's going to be sentenced this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Today, as we record, Sam Bankman-Fried is probably not sleeping right now. He's asking for leniency from the court. People will remember, of course, that he was in charge of FTX, which was one of the world's largest crypto exchanges, which sort of crashed in a fairly unpleasant way. And he was convicted of fraud. A lot of money disappeared, although the bankruptcy has proceeded and people are apparently getting their money back, or most of it anyway. But he is asking for leniency. He's looking for about 6.5 years, according to his defense team. Don't think he's going to get it. The U.S. is very strict on financial crimes, and the prosecution are looking for 40 to 50 years. So he could be looking at spending the rest of his life behind bars.
Is it worth it? For what he did, he had all the money in the world, or all the money he would ever need, but he was stealing it off other people, and then...
You know, if it was Ireland, he probably would get 6 months in prison, but the Americans do take financial crime very seriously.
Very true. What else have we got going on? Another interesting story, Meta. I was fascinated with this, actually, because, you know, they have this oversight board, which is allegedly independent and will advise Meta and Facebook and Instagram about the best way of the things. One of the things that came up recently was, it's an Arabic word, Shaheed, I think is how you say it, okay? And essentially the close English pronunciation of it is martyr. Mm. Now, if you were running Meta or Facebook and you know all of the mad things that can be said online and how it can incite people and stuff like that, do you think it's a good idea to just ban the word martyr?
Don't we talk about our mothers as martyrs? You know, it's... well, you know, metaphorical language is a problem for rules-based systems, including AIs, which they will be deploying to do this censorship. That is precisely it. We speak as humans in idiom and metaphor, and machines just don't get it.
Exactly. And that was the point that I was going to make, because, yeah, I mean, my wife often describes me as a martyr because that's how I act when she asks me to wash the dishes. Do you know what I mean? If you were to mention that on Facebook, your mother is a martyr. Do you know what I mean? We would use that. I think particularly in Ireland with our religious history and stuff like that, we use quite common. But there are lots and lots of examples where it's used and it's not meant in that particular context. And this is what they have to go around. And I think this is interesting, actually. What they recommended was to take away the blanket ban on the use of the word Shaheed. And they were only banning it with certain dangerous individuals. And now, I mean, that's a whole other day's conversation. What constitutes a dangerous individual to Facebook? But they said that it should be used within context. As I love it. It's one of my favorite words in the English language, context. Well, what happened? Well, what else was happening around as that happened to give you a better idea of what's going on, not just looking at things in isolation. And it's the same with the word martyr. And this is what the oversight board at Meta have said. They said, okay, take away the overall ban, but you have to look at the context in which the word was used.
The problem with that is there's so much context. I mean, assuming good faith on the part of the social media companies, Facebook, and its competitors, which, you know, is a hell of an assumption. But anyway, assuming good faith on their part, would you want to be responsible for leading the team that has to trawl through gigabytes, terabytes of data to understand the background context of something? You know, even with ML and AI assistance, that's a big job.
It is. And I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of the amount of information that you have to deal with. And a great example is YouTube, because YouTube are always putting out this fact. And I can't remember what it is at the moment, but they say there's something like 1,000 hours of video is uploaded every minute onto YouTube. How can you look at all that to approve it or not approve it or whatever? Yeah. And text, it must be a multiple of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly machines are doing it, because there is no group of humans could be assembled that could cope with that or emotionally cope with it either. So this is all about our algorithmic future. And, you know, there are big questions to be asked around that.
I wonder how it works. Is it like the AI will kind of flag it and then a human being looks after it? I don't think even that would work, would it?
I suspect that it's kind of low-hanging fruit situation. So it can pick out, you know, for example, swear words and then not allow them on videos that are not, you know, adult only or something. And it'll look for kind of things that it interprets on the screen as pornographic and so on and so forth. But I think, yeah, much more complicated edge cases are going to be pushed to a human team. But, you know, how they deal with that, I don't know.
Even that, or actually, do you know, almost the best thing is to just inform the user that your post has been banned. And if the user wants to take it further, then they can take it up with a human being, and that might...
Well, that definitely happens in terms of the copyright strike stuff. I mean, if you're a creator and you upload something and there's a piece of music in it, I was doing something a while ago with some library music, and it noted the music. It also noted that it was library music and that I was allowed to use it because it was licensed for, you know, commercial use. So it's clever enough to do that with on the copyright side of things. So I suspect we will see that when it comes to sort of moderation as well.
Last story of the week, also on AI, and you've news was Amazon getting serious on AI as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, AI, you know, is obviously the big tech topic of the minute. And, you know, in fairness, there's a lot of it is overhyped, but it's also a very real thing and it's having a big impact. And we've seen Microsoft, and we've seen a lot of these companies, Google, for example, making big announcements. We're expecting one from Apple this week, but Amazon has jumped on board now. I mean, Amazon is no stranger to AI. The famous Amazon algorithm is a form of AI, but it has made a $1.2 billion investment in a company called Anthropic, which is a kind of splinter group that's split away from OpenAI and has created a large language model called Claude that it claims is even better than ChatGPT-4. Now, this is just really interesting stuff, because while Google has certainly had a few problems with its Bard and then Gemini AI, leaving the field wide open for OpenAI and Microsoft, we could see real competition here. It's probably likely that this Claude LLM will be implemented by Amazon to help sellers create descriptions of their products and do marketing things, but I suspect we'll see much wider uses of it very soon.
Excellent. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. That is the news for this week. As always, Niall may be away, but the news continues and coverage continues as well right throughout the Easter holidays at techcentral.ie, keeping you updated.
Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland.
So it's a weekend. It's a big weekend. We've got a bank holiday weekend. It's Easter. The clocks are going to jump forward, and it's April the 1st. All in 2 or 3 days. No wonder Niall went on holidays. He couldn't take all that in one go. Anyway, April the 1st, April Fool's Day, of course. Let me start off by playing you a little, one of the classic April Fool's things that happen. And this is an official announcement from YouTube a number of years ago. I think it actually was 10 years ago, I think. But it was very well done. Take a listen on April Fool's Day.
We are so close to the end. Tonight at midnight, YouTube.com will no longer be accepting entries. After 8 amazing years, it is finally time to review everything that has been uploaded to our site and begin the process of selecting a winner.
Brilliant. Give us the story behind this.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube claiming that it was closing down the site, that the whole thing had been a competition. They have a history of messing people around on April Fool's Day. But can you imagine the panic that creators went into? People who have quit their jobs to become YouTube content video producers, vloggers and travel vloggers and all kinds of people. It's not the only thing they've done. They also at one point claimed that they were going to release all of YouTube on DVD and that it would be delivered to your house on several hundred trucks. I'm still waiting on that.
True enough. I thought it was just so well done and what a really nice twist to it. And my other favourite thing on April Fool's, and we move on after this, is Twitter. They had one a couple of years back where they were only going to publish tweets without vowels. So it would only be consonants, which kind of fits in with the, you know, the Twitter leaving off the last E on the name and stuff like that. But if you wanted to see the full words and understand what was being said, you could pay $5 and boom, you're in.
Yeah, that was back in 2013 as well. You know what? If you told me that that had happened under Elon Musk, I would actually believe you. That sounds like the kind of thing to...
That's why I mentioned it today, because it's not an April Fool's. That is something that could actually happen. It's just unreal. Let's chat about Easter eggs. Now we're not talking about the little chocolate things that we will be munching over the weekend, but hidden features or messages or jokes that are kind of placed into computer code. Where did the whole name Easter egg come from?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had to think about that because I first heard about these things, you know, way back in the 90s, and I just took the name and as that's the name, that's what they're called. I didn't think about where it came from, so I looked it up, and it comes from the tradition of going Easter egg hunting. You know, that's something I used to do with my mother when I was a little boy. You know, we'd paint up these boiled eggs and hide them in the garden and then go out and find them and so on. So the idea is that these messages, as you say, that are hidden away in the code, you go searching for them in the software and they're kind of a little reward, a little trick, a little maybe an expression or a graphic or something will pop up on the screen and you'll feel satisfied that you've gone hunting and found a secret that no one else knew about.
I think one of the earliest examples of an Easter egg was back in the late 60s when everything was still running on a command line. And you would use the word make. They said if you wanted to create a file, you would say make a file. So it would be make, blah, 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 and that would be the instruction that you give it. And somebody did a little Easter egg where if you typed in make, the computer would respond with love. Or sorry, if you want to make a file called love and you typed in make love, the computer would respond with not war.
Yeah.
Which you find that a bit ironic, don't you?
It is a bit ironic considering that at that time, the only, apart from maybe a few government accounting systems, most computers were in the kind of Department of Defense for calculating ballistic missiles.
They were in the war business anyway. Yeah. Make love, not war. But the actual first use of Easter eggs, and I think you know the story behind this, with Atari kind of in the early 80s.
Yeah. It actually dates back in a strange way to those text computers you were talking about, because there used to be a game on those called Adventure, and it was a text thing. You type in go north, open box, kill dragon, get lamp, all this kind of, and it would respond to you in text. So decade later, in the 70s, Atari comes out with its VCS 2600 games console, which obviously isn't text-based. It's graphics, all adventure. Or not, it's all, Frogger and Pong and Pac-Man, that kind of game. But one guy there, Warren Robinette, he wanted to produce something, more in-depth, kind of what we now would sort of think of as a Legend of Zelda game. So he decided to create a graphical game called Adventure based on that old text game. So he went and created it, and you play, you can watch it on YouTube, you play a dot and, you go around chasing kind of what looked like giant low-resolution chickens. But anyway, it's a very early kind of Zelda-type game. But in those days, Atari didn't give credit to its programmers, so no one knew who programmed this game, but that's where Easter eggs come in.
And did they, was he able to get credit then
when he designed it? His manager came up with the term for this. His manager was Stephen Wright, director of software development. He called it an Easter egg, and that's where the term Easter egg comes from, even though, as you point out, the idea of the hidden secret code does go back further. But there was a special screen in the game where you could get to by performing a certain maneuver, and it would tell you, this game was written by Warren Robinette, and he felt that was him finally getting the credit he deserved for being a sort of long-standing games programmer.
And I think from what I heard of it, Atari absolutely loved it, because once the word got out, it was like, well, how do you get that? And because everybody loves to know a secret and stuff like that, and all kinds of key combinations and whatever. And there was a whole bunch of stuff that when I was getting into computers, Excel at one stage had a flight sim game hidden in it. It wasn't a great one, but nevertheless, it was in there. There was a pinball game, if I'm not mistaken, in Word. Of course, officially they're not allowed anymore. Apple had some stuff as well.
Anyone who used an Apple in a production environment like me back in the day in the newspaper business, we all used Quark Express back then. Everyone's moved on to InDesign now. But, it's a very serious, very sober, very expensive piece of software for laying out your magazines or newspapers or whatever. But, one thing you might want to do is, you would click on a text box or a graphic box and hit delete and it would go away. But if you held down a couple of keys while you were pressing delete, instead of it just cutting, a little sort of alien robot would march across the screen and shoot it with a laser. This kind of sort of jokey playfulness is very much central to Easter eggs. It's kind of programmer humor, hacker humor, but it's also Apple hates that, and Steve Jobs hated that, and he got rid of them at Apple, which I think is very interesting.
I heard, though, after he died that somebody started putting little Easter eggs in somewhere. And after Steve Jobs died, there was something where you would download apps from Apple and the apps would be dated as the 24th of January, 84, regardless of when you downloaded it, because that was the date of the launch of the original Mac.
Yeah, that's amazing. one of the reasons, and I mean, you could accuse Jobs and I think Microsoft had a ban on them at one point as well of being humorless. But there is a kind of potential reason for it. Even going back to that Atari example, very early, in order to get that past the people who were checking the code, he had encrypted his message. So, a sort of form of encryption so that no one knew what the code did. You do not want encrypted, undocumented code in your applications. That is bad. It's not just, fun things that could be hidden away. So I think that explains why the industry doesn't like them, even if developers and programmers love them.
And then finally on Easter eggs and April Fools and stuff like that, I mean, Google is legendary for it with the barrel roll.
Yeah.
But if you type in barrel roll or do a barrel roll or something like that, and the screen does all kinds of weird things. One that I like, and it's not necessarily an Easter egg, all right, but if you type in Space Invaders into Google, you can actually play Space Invaders on the screen. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, Google Doodle, which, is a bit of a sort of tradition now. I mean, it's hardly a secret, but it's a playful thing, and I think it's arguably related to Easter eggs. It's just a bit more up in front of you, and they use it to often celebrate, famous scientists or, figures from history. It's kind of fun. In Chrome, if you're not connected from the internet, there's an infinite running game where you can play as a dinosaur jumping over cactuses, you know, their little thing. And of course, for any of you sitting there using a Mac or Linux, you can go into Emacs, the text editor in the terminal, and play Tetris inside that. So, yeah, these things still exist.
It's nuts. Anyways, well, listen, whatever you're doing for Easter this weekend, we do hope you have a good one. And Jason, thank you very much for joining us and filling us in on everything.
Thanks, Dusty.
This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
That's it for our show this week. We'll be back again next Friday after the bank holiday with a brand new show online and, of course, with RTE Radio 1 Extra. In the meantime, do remember to share our podcast with a friend. Just tell them to look up Tech Radio Ireland on Apple, Spotify or YouTube. Until next time, from myself, Dusty Rhodes, and from Jason Walsh, thank you so much for listening. Take care.
Remember, you can get the latest Irish tech news with hourly updates, daily newsletters, and more at our website, techcentral.ie. Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland, or listen with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Tech Radio is produced by dustpod.io for techcentral.ie. From me, Artemis, live long and prosper.